Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
Welcome. Do I know you?
Yes, Gail.
Gail.
Yes.
Great. Good to see you. All right. Well, in Zen, in this practice of Zen, we tend to stress the practice of not thinking. Right? None of us do it perfectly, but we do give room for it, you know, on a morning like this. And it's in Zazen that we learn to get a little bit closer to it, to that mind and that feeling in our body of not needing to think. But not thinking is not the goal of Zen. It is just a tool that we use to open us up to new ways of thinking and of being. That's important to remember. Another tool that we use to open us up to new ways of thinking and being is study. And we just finished a class on the Heart Sutra and the Meaning of Emptiness in which we studied some old texts and some ideas, philosophies. All that feeds into our experience of Zen and our, you know, the output, which is a wonderful human being. That's what we hope. In this class on emptiness, we have been looking at, well, learning a lot about interdependence. The Buddhist word for that is pratityasamutpada, and it's often translated dependent origination. But you know, commonly known as interdependence. And, you know, the reason we've been studying it in a class on emptiness is it turns out that emptiness and dependent origination go hand in hand. They're really fundamentally tied together. So here's how, in a nutshell. And then, yeah, I thought I hope this works. Red Pine said, in a Buddhist context, never call something just empty. Call it empty of self, because that's what emptiness means. It doesn't mean nothingness. It means empty of self. The concept of empty means empty of something in particular. Thich Nhat Hanh says, holds up a glass of water. Or he says, if you were to hold up a glass of water and then pour the water out, you would say that glass is empty, right? Empty of what?
Water.
Of water, yeah. Not empty of air. It's got air in there, microbes. But it's empty of what we thought was in it. And in the same way, we and everything is empty of svabhava. That is the hardest word. Did I get that right, Cynthia? Svabhava. Which means intrinsic self nature. This idea that we have an intrinsic self nature, or self, essential self nature, selfness. We have this persistent illusion that things have more selfness than they really have. They're really made up of lots of elements. So a Zafu, for instance, you know, doesn't have intrinsic Zafu nature, even though we kind of unconsciously give it that nature. As someone who makes zafus, I know this, that it's put together by fabric and kapok and lots of things, lots of non-zafu elements, as Thich Nhat Hanh would say. It's dependent on all those elements coming together. It's also dependent on somebody deciding to make a zafu a long time ago. It's dependent on our continuing to use it as a zafu. It's also dependent on my view, that my mind that calls it a zafu, whether consciously or unconsciously. So it's intrinsic of, it's empty of intrinsic zafu nature. And in classical Buddhist thought, everything is dependent in multiple ways. I won't get into all those multiple ways now, but in multiple ways, you and everything is dependent on other things. And I came away from this class, you know, with a feeling that dependent origination, interdependence, really is a gift that keeps giving. There is so much there to discover, to learn about. And I as a result of this class, I'm going to study it more and think about it more. This Zen is not just about not thinking. It's also about thinking and about the ways that thinking develops our character. I'm going to spend more time thinking about interdependence. Today I want to key in on something that Buddhism teaches, this point that we are more dependent than we think, which doesn't sound great. It may not sound great news to you. We like to think of ourselves as independent, I think. We're all grown up. As kids, of course, we were dependent. And as adults, we're independent. A psychologist friend of mine uses one system of thought in which there are four stages of life in the parent-child relationship. First one is dependent. You are dependent on your parents. Second one is counter-dependent. You're still dependent on them, but this is your teenagers. But you're completely counter to everything that they say, dependent on what they believe, so that you can be counter. And then the next one is independent from them as you grow up. And the last one, the most mature one, is interdependent, understanding your interdependence with your parents, with your family. That's the last and most mature phase, appreciating that interdependence. Buddhism says we are more interdependent than we think, and that we can learn something from that that will help us in our life. That knowledge, rightly understood, will help ourselves and help other people. You and I depend on all kinds of things all the time, and everything else in the world does too. We depend on the air that we breathe, the food that we eat, this heart that just keeps beating without any, you know, help from us, the millions of bacteria in our gut, many things that we depend on. And in a more subtle way, and this is the way I want to talk about it today in particular, the very idea of you depends on a lot of things. The very idea that I have of me depends on a lot of things. It's shaped by all of the experiences that I have, all of the things that I meet in my life. In a way, I am made up by all those things, all those shifting things. By the breakfast I ate this morning, the walk that I took, the emails sent, the sights that I see, the feelings that I feel. I'm made up by everything in the world that I meet. And noticing those experiences and appreciating them is a part of our practice. Appreciating all of those experiences, not just a few of them, as much as we can at any rate. And to really do so, to really do that, I think we have to stop judging them and bending them all the time, manipulating circumstances, deciding what's good and bad, what to take and what to leave, trying to make this happen or that happen. Doing these things, making decisions, judging, that's the stuff of life. And it's, of course, it's important. We have to feed ourselves, to make appointments. We have, if we have kids, we have to learn, figure out how to raise them. We have to figure out how to be a good friend. But it's also important, Buddhism says, to notice, just notice the experiences and not to judge them. And that's our basic practice. That's Zen 101, is stopping and noticing. And stop for a time shaping life. Stop going from desire to desire, shaping things, then another one, and another desire, and shaping it. Korean master Sun Sun, who's a Nita Thangs teacher, used to say, "Don't make anything." That was one of his phrases that he loved. Don't make anything. Stop making things for a little and you'll learn something. When you stop, you'll notice all of the things that make you up. For my ordination was almost 30 years ago now, and I was given, on my ordination day, I was given a poem handwritten by another monk. And that poem has stuck with me all this time. I haven't memorized it, it's too long. But it's A Child Went Forth by Walt Whitman. And it starts like this: there was a child went forth every day, and the first object he looked upon, that object he became. And that object became part of him for the day or a certain part of the day, and for many years or stretching cycles of years. The early lilacs became part of this child. The grass and white and red morning glories and white and red clover and the song of the Phoebe bird and the third month lambs and the sow's pink faint litter and the mare's foal and the cow's calf and on and on and on in Walt Whitman fashion. Including the old drunkard staggering home from the outhouse, the friendly boys that passed, the quarrelsome boys, all things good, all things bad, the father with a quick temper, the mother with her own character, loving character. And then he says, yeah, they all became part of this child who went forth every day and who now goes and will always go forth every day. That's, I love Walt Whitman, right? The classic American poet. And another thing he said was, we are large. We can contain multitudes. That's what he's talking about here. We contain all of these things. All of these things. I didn't think about it at the time, but considering this containing everything, I mean, I was taught a lesson in that. I won't go into all the details, but when I had moved here, we'd been here for 3-4 years, I think. I finally had enough space. We didn't have any money, and we were this, that, and the other to volunteer at the elementary school, because that's what good parents do. And I was not one of those parents, nor was Lee Yun. So finally, for the first time, I volunteered for something. And it was just this little job, watching out for the kids. But it wasn't that important a job, but if I wasn't there, things went wrong. And then I forgot to go. And so the great Zen monk on the island forgot to show up. And I wrote this email to Mrs. Munger, I'm so sorry. This will never happen again. 3 weeks later, once a week. 3 weeks later, I looked up at the clock. It was 12:15. I was supposed to be there at 12. Oh, I just wanted to be in a different body.
Yeah.
You know that feeling, right? You just want to disappear underneath the floor. I think I literally got on the floor. Oh, so painful, just a hot knife. And then I realized, yeah, I'm a screw up. That's me. That is me. And I feel like I grew a little larger in that moment, just realizing that, you know, as painful as that was, that also is me. I think, I'm not really talking about gratitude during this talk. It's more appreciation. I mean, there's maybe a subtle difference there. But appreciating all of the things that go into making you and me. All of the good experiences and the bad ones. We don't have to spend our whole life wanting the good things to happen, avoiding the bad things, deciding that we're just that person and not that person. The way Dogen puts it is, don't make a nest in the spring garden or darken with the fall colors. Know that they're all part of the cycle of the seasons, he says. That both are part of the cycle of you. And take note of it all, appreciate it all in some way. And when we do that, we can see more clearly what a miracle it is, I think. I'm not vouching for Louis C.K. as a person, but there is a lovely clip from his show in which he's talking to his doctor, who he happens to meet on a cold day outside, about his pain after a breakup. And the doctor says, and the doctor just can't believe it. He says, if only you could see it. This is the good part. This is the amazing part, the deep, sweet sadness. He says, paraphrasing, he says, misery is really wasted on the miserable. There's also a country song, lots of country songs to this effect, actually. One of them is not one of my favorite country songs, but I ran across it recently, not looking for this in particular, but it's called That's the Good Stuff. And, after his first big argument with his wife, the guy goes to the bar and asks for a shot of the good stuff. Give me a shot of the good stuff. And the bartender pours him some milk and tells him the troubles that he's going through right now. That's the good stuff. You can't find the good stuff here, he says. That brings me to a story told by Zen teacher Soko Morinaga. When he first enters the temple, and on his first day, his teacher says, gives him his first job, which is to clean the garden. And he starts by sweeping everything up and making a big pile of leaves. And then he asks his teacher, what shall I do with this trash? And his teacher says, there is no trash. So cool. Looks at him funny. And his teacher says, go get that sack, charcoal sack, empty charcoal sack, and tells him when he comes back with it, he says, put all the leaves in here, take them to the shed over there, and we'll use them to make a fire under the bath. So he does that. And then he comes back, when he comes back, he sees the Roshi picking out the little stones from that were left over, and very carefully, and then gives them to Soko. And he says, arrange these underneath the rain gutters. So Soko goes and does that, and he's pretty proud of himself. He does a nice job. He makes a nice little pattern. He says, okay, all right, that wasn't trash. But then he goes back and sees the dross, you know, clods of earth and moss. And he sees the Roshis taking each one carefully, looking for a spot in the garden to put it and to tamp it down with his foot. Then he tells Soko, please understand, from the first, in people and in things, there is no trash. There is no trash, meaning, I think, that everything is part of the world. Everything in your experience is part of you. And we can learn to use those things that we are connected with, if we see them properly. In people and in things, there is no trash, and in experience too. To the extent that we can feel this, I think we can have a new appreciation for our life. And we'll be able to see through the labels that we put on people and things and experiences very sloppily, and have a different attitude, a more appreciative attitude, more nuanced and more.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center.
Approach to.
Thanks so
to
much
our
for
lives.
Listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.